You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we are back. Our band, the Menzingers, have announced a spring tour with Oso Oso and Sincere Engineer, and the tickets are officially on sale. If you're in the U.S. or Canada, there's a pretty damn good chance we'll be swinging through near you sometime between April and May of 2022. I am very excited about today's guest, Marissa DeBees of Mannequin Pussy. We were on tour with Mannequin Pussy right before the world pumped the brakes back in early 2020. And since then, we've both been very fortunate enough to dive back into touring. Marissa is an accomplished songwriter, performer, and visual artist, having directed 5 music videos to date. I find her work very inspiring. For you Philly kids, Mannequin Pussy are playing at Franklin Music Hall at the Electric Factory on New Year's Eve. I'm sure it's going to be fucking awesome. Now, on to my conversation today with Marissa. All right. Hey, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah.
I'm so stoked for this. I wanted to kick it off. I have to ask you, you told me on Instagram one time when I had posted something, can you tell me about what you guys saw in the deserts of the Northwest?
The deserts?
I got the location right.
Of the Northwest. Well, not the deserts of the Northwest.
Okay.
It was like a mountainous valley. You're talking about the UFO.
Yep.
Now called UAPs,
now
right?
Now called UAPs, yeah.
Yeah, a UAP I saw.
Amazing. Can you tell me the story?
Yeah. I think it was like 2010, and I was on a road trip from Colorado with a few friends to go drive to the Pacific Northwest, and we were driving through Idaho. And this was like back when we were like young and had stamina, so we did like a trip from Colorado to Seattle like without stopping. So you're just like...
Not only not stopping, you're like excited
about it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're like...
So free.
Hell yeah, we're going to be in the car for 18 hours driving. Like, let's go.
Hell yeah.
So it's like very late at night driving through somewhere in Idaho, and out of nowhere, this huge bright light just appears in the sky and then immediately starts zooming across the sky.
You just made a signal with your hands that was like diagonal zag. So it was like making hard angle turns.
Yes, exactly.
Damn.
Hard diagonal turns in the sky. Then... it separated into 3 smaller lights.
Jesus.
That then also did their diagonal, what do we just call that?
A zigzag?
A zigzag.
Yeah.
Did their diagonal zigzag things. And then it all came together again as one light and disappeared.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's an incredible story. That's even more intense than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. When I say I was something else, or there's some technology out there that we definitely do not know about.
Wow. Jesus. What was like, were there a lot of other cars on the road? Was it just
no, I mean, it wasn't, it was like late and probably like 2 in the morning or something. Yeah. So a 2 in the morning road in Idaho.
Damn. Wow. I've actually remember driving through Idaho at one point and, you know, just complete speculation, but there's only so many giant interstates in Idaho, I guess, but there was a gas station where we stopped and there had been sightings near there. So they had this whole makeshift little thing set up by the cash register that was like postcards and like books written by people in the community, like self-published
also
books.
In Idaho.
Yeah, also in Idaho.
Oh.
Damn. But that's wild. That's crazy. That has all the hallmarks. You have something that had separated and then reconvened, and then the big thing moving fast and taking right angle turns. Like that's so much better than a lot of, you know, UFO stories I've heard from people where they're like, yeah, it slowly came over the mountain and then it slowly went away. And I was like, well, helicopters do that and drones and shit.
Yeah, this was like fast and curious and like technology I'd never seen move in the sky like
Jesus.
That.
Jesus, were you guys freaking out?
I think I was, and my friends were like, whoa, that's weird. And I was like, you guys, this is like, this warrants like such much more like excitement than, oh, that's weird.
Totally. The ultimate question answered. That's or potentially.
I wish I knew where in Idaho this was. This was like before I had an iPhone or most people had iPhones.
Sure. Yeah.
So not only were we driving through the night, we were doing it with like MapQuest map directions.
And yeah, like and maps. The flashlight inside, or the dome light in the car.
Yeah.
I remember when we were first touring, we would print out the MapQuest directions, or first going on road trips, you'd print them out and then, you know, just roll around with no GPS. It was wild. We would stick our head out the window and listen for music and be like, are we close to the house party or wherever we're going?
Oh.
Yeah. That would happen. Maybe that was more of a Pennsylvania woods thing.
Yeah.
We'd be like, hey, do you want to play, you know, Tunkhannock somewhere like an hour outside of where we were from? We'd be like, yeah, sure. And then eventually you just hear like guitars and drums. And oh, or you stop at the gas station and be like, hey. Or they would like tie a red balloon, birthday party style, like out on the road.
Oh, that's smart.
So not to get too heady from it, but you're out traveling all those times and you get to travel so much now playing music. How do you think traveling informs you creatively?
Oh, I think it presents more of a challenge creatively.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think being in constant motion sometimes is, not exactly entwined with being creative.
Wow. That's a really good point. Yeah. That's for us. I know that we always try to write on tour, and sometimes we write, but oftentimes, you know, you don't really write that much because you're like, okay, well, I have an hour long window before, you know, sound checking or whatever where I can do this. But yeah,
I'm impressed by people who say that they are able to write on tour, because I just like cannot imagine. But I mean, I've come up with like little, maybe like a riff during a sound check, or I've started to think, you know, I have like voice memos of like melody ideas and things
sure.
like that.
Yeah.
This past tour, I like really wanted to write on. I was definitely feeling like, oh man, I gotta write a song.
Yeah.
But there's just so much going on.
And there's so much, it becomes so socially overwhelming, especially in a situation like what you guys just did, which you know, could get into, was a wildly roller coaster of a tour. but the, you know, as you're back to touring after not being able to for so long, there's so many, I don't want to call them social responsibilities, but there's just so many people that you haven't seen that have moved from where you're from or that you met and that you know, you want to see them that day, or you have, you know, interviews and things like that. It always ends up rolling in and making it hard for it. I always watch YouTube videos of like the producers and stuff that will have something set up like in a hotel room or in the van or on a bus or something. I'm always like, damn, that in theory seems right. But every time I try to do it, I spend more time setting up than.
Yeah, exactly. Like any free time I have, I would like to try to sleep.
Yeah.
Like yeah, that's pretty much like how I would, especially on this last tour, because like I also busted my ankle, so I wasn't able to do the main thing I like to do on tour when I have like a moment to myself, which is just go for a walk around the venue.
Yeah,
you know, those like few steps you get,
oh totally,
feel great. But then after I like busted my ankle, I wasn't able to do that, so I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just try to sleep. I'm not trying to write songs.
Yeah. I always wanted to write songs though, because I always feel like it's the ultimate, like environmental framework. Because you're like, what I mean by that is you're playing shows every day, so you're like, this is where the songs are going to end up. So I see like what it's going to be like. I can see what people like at certain moments of different songs and stuff like that. I'm like, this is where the end is, but I can never really break from that.
Do you workshop songs on tours sometimes that aren't out yet?
We have in the past, but we've actually had like a lot of friction within ourselves, whether we were like, because right when we were really into some bands like Against Me and stuff that would play new songs on tour all the time, and then we would immediately be just hunting down the YouTube video of it or hunting down like whatever post on a message.
Oh, that's
board.
Always so fun.
Yeah, and it would be like a bad quality thing, so we're always like, we don't want to play it shitty and have a cell phone recording and do that, but we've gotten into doing it more often, but not, we don't really actually workshop them like I think a lot of other musicians and other genres and stuff would.
We played Drunk Too for years live, and people would like ask about that song. They're like, I can't find this song. And I'm like, it's coming.
Yeah. That's, you like almost created it into like a legendary status kind of thing where people saw you enough times it would get stuck in their head and they'd be looking for it and be like,
can't find it anywhere.
It's not there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah. So I wanted to shift a bit into your visual style. I know you've directed some music videos, the one for Control, one for Perfect, and other videos as well. You described your visual style at an interview I was reading as hyper-realist fantasy, which I really liked. I wanted to ask about that and then ask a bit some nerdier questions about what it's like to direct. So that's like specifically, like, how do you collaborate in that fashion as compared to music? Like, how do you create – you're like directing a team essentially, right?
Yeah, which I think is very similar to being in a band. Because in a band, what you have are, you know, a group of individuals who are all working together with different talents to chase a vision or a sound.
True.
And I think that translates really well into the film space, where you have this idea and your job is to communicate it to everyone who's then able to do things that you aren't to make it the greatest it can possibly be.
Wow. So you touched on something there that you said that I wanted to focus on. You said you have an idea, so that you do come at it with like a top-down kind of notion of where you want it to go. So you have like,
yeah,
not like creating a culture or coming up with like a rule or something, a vision, you'd say.
Yeah.
So you have that in mind, and then you're like, okay, well, who can help me bring that to life,
yeah,
essentially?
Exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always admired that. I found it like, I got really into photography a couple years ago, and I've always wanted to kind of move more into a video space, but I've always found the whole thing so intimidating.
It's a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
It's very expensive.
Yeah.
And it also takes a lot of people to pull off.
Yeah.
But I think I've described in the past as it's so rewarding when you pull off something that you have only been able to see in your mind, and then you see it play out for you. And when you fall short of that, it's like a learning experience where you're like, okay, like this is definitely what I should do different. And I've had that experience now with like a few different videos. 'Cause I think now I've just finished my fifth one.
No shit. That's awesome.
And now that I have like this little, you know, this is like a new thing for me, is,
yeah,
directing,
sure,
but it's always something that's, I'm like, I would love to do that.
Yeah, I find it really exciting and really interesting as well. It's like that you can take that vision with something so complicated. For me, a song, you can hum a melody, and then, well, maybe it's because we did it for so long and so many years. You're like, okay, well, I know what the drums are probably going to end up like. I know like where we're going to go with this or whatever, but it always seems to me like in a music video or any other visual, you know, video collaborative effort, you're like, okay, well, this can go so many ways. You can focus in on like even something that somebody would be wearing and then realize that you can't procure that, or you can't, like, you know.
You do have to be flexible sometimes in like how specifically you see things, and let them sometimes be like, okay, well, what I thought of was actually unattainable. But I mean, songs are stories a lot of times.
Uh-huh.
And a music video, if it has a narrative, is a story. So it's like the same, I kind of like, in some ways, maybe approach songwriting, no, it is different. But like for Drunk 2, for instance, for that video, it was like, okay, there's this young woman and she is so heartbroken, and we just see her going to this bar every single night, and she's walking through a tunnel of love, our fantasy element, where, yeah, it's like we're playing with the realism of that, but inflating it to this point where like things are happening where you're like, is this happening in her head,
yeah,
and she's like romanticizing these situations she's in, or is this just like what this world is? And that is fun to play with, where,
yeah,
you can,
I
like,
love that opens, gives you a guideline, but also keeps it really wide open.
Yeah,
we'll do what you want to do.
Being able to play with your world, I think that's what is so fun about film.
Yeah.
And just like any, is you can make the world a little bit more beautiful. I wish every, yeah, bar I walked into had like a tunnel of love in it.
Right. Hell yeah. So I got to ask where the genesis for a lot of that was. Did you start out primarily as a musician? Were you like a theater kid? Did you?
I was not a theater kid.
Okay. That gets rid of all the jokes. But, you know, were you into photography or cinematography, or did you learn anything in school? Or?
I did try out for a play when I was in high school, but I did not get in.
Damn.
Little
did they
know. I did not get in. I remember my audition being terrible, though. I would do that thing. I don't actually really want to think about it too much. But I did take photography for a long time. I was always really interested in like film, and I used to take photos like constantly.
Yeah.
And just kind of dropped off with it. Pretty much as soon as I started playing in a band, like the years I probably should have been documenting the most, I.
It's funny. That's what got me into photography. An aunt of mine was like, hey, you go to Europe and let me see some pictures.
She's right.
Like, oh, every one of them is like in backstage of like a wet German venue. That's it. That's all I got to show you. I went to Cologne. They have the enormous dome cathedral built over a span of like 400 years. And I took a picture of like half drink lager beer or something, you know.
Oh.
It's like, oh shit, well, I should probably learn this.
My high school was pretty cool though. They had a dark room, so I learned like dark room photography as a teenager.
Oh, that's very cool.
And so I got really into, I got like really into like the process of that and like the chemicals. And I think it also maybe taught me a little bit of patience for something.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, you're going to have to wait.
Totally.
And you're going to take this image, but then you're going to have to do all this other work to see it to its final form.
Yeah. I'm actually really glad you brought up that patience part of film photography. So when I got into photography, it was all digital. I was like, film, why would I do that? It's expensive. You only get one shot. You can't see it in the moment. And then after a couple of years now, I love taking film pictures because of the fact that you're 10 times more intentional with the picture that you take. You're like, okay, well, I can do... So there's like a drive setting, you know, on digital cameras. You can be like,
yeah,
take a million pictures. But the film one, you're like, no, one pick. It's got to be perfect. And then you got to wait for it. And it's like that delayed gratification that comes. And you're like, yes. Or oftentimes in my case, you're like, fuck, there's my fingers in front of it. Or... you know, it's underexposed, that kind of thing. But seeing the process of it and realizing what's happening too is pretty cool. You have, I mean, I've never developed a film before, but it's I understand it's a photosensitive chemicals that get exposed very quickly, and then you use other chemicals to like invert it, bring it out to like a new printed on another sheet.
Yeah.
Oh.
You have like a, like basically like a microfiche looking like microscope almost thing, and you like put your negative onto it, and then you set up your paper, and then depending on how long you expose the light onto it, and then you immediately put it into like a chemical bath.
Wow.
That then like sets what it was, and okay, then you do that, and then you, there's like another chemical bath.
Yeah.
And then there's another one, and then you rinse.
It's been, and if you took a picture of a ghost, all the things that are hanging up catch on fire.
Yeah, exactly. The room burns around you.
Yeah. We used to do a screen printing on our own. We had like a little side business back before we moved to Philly a long time ago. And you had to expose the... So when you're getting screen printed a t-shirt, for anybody who doesn't know, a t-shirt that's screen printed, each color will have its own screen, and they kind of just pull ink over the negative of it, and then the ink falls through. But you have to expose those screens. So you like put something in front of it. It's like, it seems like very rudimentary photography. But the biggest takeaway for that for me was people on internet forums said to do the pirate trick, which the reason why pirates would wear an eye patch was so that you put it over one eye, and it got, that eye became used to nighttime and like adjusted to the darkness, so that you can work on the top of the ship and then switch down to the bottom of the ship, and you just switch your eye patch over.
What?
And you're able to see in the dark. I was like, damn. So we tried doing that.
Is that for real?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty wild. Never really worked, and it was just more fun than anything. But I wanted to ask you a bit about Mayor of Easttown, which was that HBO show that you got, your music was featured in. So Beth Ann, my fiance, you were talking about before, she grew up in Delco.
Oh, well,
and,
hell yeah.
Yeah, we would spend...
Shout out to Delco.
Hell yeah. I actually lived there as a baby for a while. Shout out to Prospect Park that I've been back to like one time. But we would spend every Christmas Eve at our uncle's house in Clifton Heights with... He's a contractor. And it was like a row home in Clifton Heights. All of their contractor friends and their families would like come in and out all night. And it was such a Delco experience. And, you know, just the show nailed it so hard. And it was so awesome. How did you guys, how did that come about?
It came about, well, as we all know, they were filming it in Philly and in Delco.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not on an LA soundstage, everyone. They really filmed it here.
Hell yeah.
And a friend of mine, Allie Pierce, was working in the costume department on an early, like early pre-production days.
Cool.
And, the creator of the show, Brad Englesby, was in a meeting with her and one of the other costumers talking about the character of Siobhan and the bands and things like that. And he was like, these are kind of my breadth of influences for like what her band would sound like.
Yeah.
And then based on that, Allie was like, oh, you should listen to Mannequin Pussy. Like, they're great and they're local. And then Brad Englesby went and listened to us. And to quote him, he said he fell in love with us.
That's fucking awesome.
And was like, I can't hear anything else as like Siobhan's band, like what I would want her band to sound like.
Wow. That's amazing.
So yeah, it was Brad Englesby.
So fucking cool. Like, just to skip over all that, wasn't some, you know, the music designer or something that was like from Philly or something. It was like the legit.
So Brad went to I think his name is Gabe Helfner. He was the music supervisor on the show. He went to him and was like, I found the band I want them to sound like. Like, now what do we do? Do we have to, like, hire a band to make songs that kind of sound like theirs? Or do we find a band that kind of sounds like them? And Gabe was like, well, we could just ask them if they would want to, like, you know, work with us to have their music be in the show.
Amazing.
And then they did. And we were like, hell yeah. Exactly. That sounds cool.
Fuck yeah. What does that process look like when it gets to that point? Do you have to... All right, so here's a question that I wanted to ask. I don't know if I'm completely crazy or if you've ever noticed this or anybody else ever noticed this, but when listening to songs I'm extremely familiar with, sometimes when they're on TV shows, they're like mixed differently.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes they'll be... Different instruments are much more prominent than others. Sometimes they sound a lot better.
Sometimes they even chop up the song to make certain parts longer.
No shit. So is that what went on with you guys? Like,
no, with ours, they completely re-recorded them. Because they didn't... Okay. They were supposed to be high schoolers.
Oh.
So they basically wanted it to sound like Mannequin Pussy. Like, that song was played by a bunch of high schoolers.
Wow.
And like stripped down. And then the actress, Anjali Rice, went to Will Yip and recorded her vocals for those songs and then like sang my part. So it was her voice.
That's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
They like really kept it in. I mean, like just Will.
Yeah.
Who obviously you and I both are, you know. Yeah. He was part of this experience too. He worked on Mary Beastown.
Totally. So we knew about that a little bit. That's how we first heard about it, was because we were getting ready to shoot the live stream that we did at Studio 4 in June of 2020. And he had mentioned it. He was like, he did it in a very fantastically Will way too. He just like name dropped Kate Winslet. And we were like, really? You're just going to name drop the Titanic lady? And like, you got to give a little bit more context. And he, you know, told us a little bit about it and how it was and stuff. And it sounded really cool.
Brad Inglesby reached out to me again after our van was stolen to...
Oh my God.
Just say that he heard about it and he was so sorry.
Damn,
so,
that's amazing.
Seriously, stand up dude.
Wow.
He was also Pat Graham's fourth grade computer science teacher. He used to teach at like St. Patrick's in Malvern.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
That's wild.
Yeah.
It's full lineage.
Yeah, that's like, I joked with him that he was like Pennsylvania's very own 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon now.
He definitely is now. I mean, goddamn. But yeah, that was so cool that you guys got to be a part of that. And if anybody listening has not seen the series, it's fantastic.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's also wildly accurate. I always feel like sometimes when you see a show about a touring band or, you know, there's things in like The Office where they talk about Scranton and shit where I grew up, that you're like, okay, you know, we don't have palm trees. Or, okay, I get it. You're talking about being a touring band. You think that's what it's like. But this actually did seem, you know, it did seem so wildly accurate to that kind of living in Delco. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I have nothing bad to say about that show. I thought it was so good.
Yes, well,
it was like, I definitely started watching it immediately because our music was in it. It was probably the type of thing I would have watched like a few months down the line after everyone told me it was so good.
Yeah.
But I'm so happy that I got to like watch it unfold week after week. Like, that was a small light during like what was still kind of quarantine days.
Yeah, totally.
Of like just having something to look forward to every week.
Yeah, something you could do at your house that wasn't soul crushing.
Yeah.
How much forward kind of, so when you were watching the show, you had no idea whether it was about to come, you know, whether the scene was coming up or.
Yeah, I mean, when you get syncs and things like that, like they usually send you like a sheet that says, that describes the action that's going on.
Sure.
And like, yeah. How long it lasts for, but it definitely like was like, I watched it with subtitles and they put the lyrics of the song into the subtitles.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
I like got to watch like Kate Winslet looking surly as Mare, as like words that I've written like pop up over the screen.
That's
so
like, awesome.
That felt really nice.
Wild journey. So just real quick, you mentioned you watched it with subtitles. Are you one of the people who watches everything with subtitles?
No, it depends on how it's mixed.
Okay.
And where it's from.
Sure. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't have an ear for like British.
Ah, okay.
Like if I watch anything from Britain, I also have like no English blood in my body. So I think that's maybe why I cannot understand for the life of me. So if it's British, I need subtitles.
Fair enough. Hell yeah. Yeah. A friend of our, a really close friend, I asked because a really close friend of mine watches, they watch everything with subtitles on, and somehow our HBO Max on the, you know, Apple TV or whatever got stuck to default subtitles. Oh. So it's always on, and I kind of like it.
Oh, you do like it?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I see. In a
contextualized,
in a director way, I sometimes don't like it because one, it kind of like messes up the frame a little bit.
Yeah.
And I like to focus more on the, almost like the whole thing. I feel like my eye line is only drawn to the words rather than like the actions and the sets in a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
So that's why I try to like switch it up depending on what I'm watching.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I'll back that.
Hey there, I'm Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
So speaking of Delco and moving around stuff, you guys took the journey. But two questions. First one is, how did you meet our mutual friend Bear?
How did I meet Bear?
Yeah, how did you meet Bear? I've known the man for a very long time.
I met Bear in, I think, 2013. I think so, yeah. That seems right to me. 2013. Yeah. And he asked Mannequin Pussy to play his annual 420 show. But he did not just ask in like a normal way where someone like sends you a small email. He wrote an email that was like two paragraphs.
Hell yeah.
Promised to make us cookies if we played, and was just so like sweet. That's so amazing. We were like, of course we need to play this. He never did make the cookies. But yeah, that was like the first time we met Bear, and I feel like pretty shortly after that he started playing with us.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. That's a great story. We knew Bear from we always thought him like a Stroudsburg kid. So he like ran with the whole Stroudsburg crew and stuff that we kind of knew before we moved down here. But then when we moved down here, Keith Yasko from the Holy Mess and his wife Chelsea used to have parties like every Sunday. And it was like a
that's cool
Stroudsburg meets Philly kind of like social almost to an extent. Got pretty crazy towards the end, and then Chelsea put the kibosh on it, I believe. But the that's where we first started hanging out.
I mean, a party every week is like a lot for the household.
Yeah, it is. Even if you're like 23, still got to be a bit much, especially when the word got out, and then it eventually became like, oh, I do this every day anyway. I can go here and do this.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But it was always amazing to see him and them. I remember going with Bear to see the premiere of Interstellar when it came out. Him and I met up, went to the Franklin Institute to see it in IMAX.
What is Interstellar?
Interstellar is the Christopher Nolan movie with Matthew McConaughey. It's actually Will's favorite movie, I believe, which is pretty funny. It's about...
I have to see it.
Yeah, you got to see it. I don't even know how I can say what it's about without kind of like ruining a little bit.
Yeah, then don't tell me.
All right, I won't tell you.
Interstellar, though, sounds like something I'd be into.
Yeah.
Based on the name alone.
Like, exactly. And the music is amazing as well. But we got too high. I remember going in and being like, oh my God, too high for this. And then it was amazing. It became one of my favorite movies. But so you guys took the move down to Philly. What did you think of Philly when you got here?
That it was everything I had been looking for. Like everywhere else I lived I didn't really live in that many places. I lived in like Colorado where I like had a house venue kind of where
I didn't know that.
We used to have like house parties.
Can you tell me about that? Where?
Yeah, in Boulder, Colorado.
No shit.
So I lived there. I went to school there and then I stayed a while after I graduated and like just, you know, worked. And I graduated in the recession. So I like had a job like washing dishes 40 exactly. hours a week while I like lived in this like creaky but pretty cool house with like, you know, five other people. But yeah, we used to have house parties every month. So we were on the every month cycle, not the every week.
Yeah, sure.
It was definitely like busy and we were, you know, being young. But yeah, we used to have like bands play in our kitchen. Amazing. And then a little bit through that, I was like, oh, playing music. Like, I couldn't, I don't just have to be a fan of music. Like, I could play music too, maybe.
That's one of my favorite things about this scene in particular. And I know that it breaches over into all other kinds of scenes. And to put a name on it is hard in itself. But the fact of so many people would be exposed to bands and music in a way that became empowering because you're like, oh, I could do this too.
Totally.
And you did it. And look at you now. You know, like, just from being in that house where people were passing through. And I'm sure, did you meet a lot of people that you ended up seeing later in life?
Like, yes.
Connections.
I mean, all my, like, that's why I moved to Philly, because the very first tour I went on, I met Rachel Gagliardi and Nicole Snyder from Slut Ever.
Whoa.
And we just, like, immediately became close. And I had been living in, I lived in New York City for like 1 year. It was a city that I was born in, and then like my family lives like an hour outside of it, so it was like the closest to home. And then I had to live home for a little bit in my early 20s too.
Sure.
And then I wasn't really sure I was going to move, and then Nicole and Rachel, this was, what fucking year was this? This is almost like 9 years ago now.
Damn.
But yeah, I was like, okay, yeah, Philly,
hell yeah.
And it was just that I was like, oh man, a lot of people here are interested in music, and there's a very vibrant like house show scene, and people want to book us, and you know, everyone I meet is like crazy in a fun way. And
yeah, crazy in a fun way is a good way to put it.
Yeah. And I was just like, this is it. This is home.
Yeah, totally. I often talk about how I think it was a bit of a perfect storm in those years between like 2008, 2013 or whatever, where the economy, as you'd mentioned, you got a job washing dishes because everything fucking went to shit.
Yeah.
But in Philly, it was like, okay, we could still afford to live in a major city. You know, at the time, it was the fifth largest city in the country. I think we just got passed out by Phoenix again, but I don't count it because it's like 50 cities. But yeah, so there was, you could have things like house venues, and you had a lot of things going. People were like, okay, well, I have a shift. Most of the jobs I'd gotten back then were like, hey, I'm going on tour, can you just take my job? And it was like a complete revolving door of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So Philly kind of created a really good perfect storm for that kind of thing.
Yeah. I was able to survive in Philly while I slowly made music my full-time thing.
When did you realize that music was going to be it? Did it kind of, because I feel like you had a lot of different.
About 6 months before the pandemic started.
Yep.
And then I had the pandemic, and then, you know, obviously you and I both have been able to go back on tour, and then going back on tour, I was like, oh, this is real. This is
hell yeah,
tight.
So we talked a bit about it before we started the podcast, but the tour that you guys did and the tour that we did, people seem to be extremely hungry and emotional for live music again. It's
yeah,
been great. There's a lot of people like crying and super excited, and yeah, it's been pretty wild.
I feel so lucky that we were able to tour at this, like, this might be too much of a grandiose statement, but at this time in human history, for real though.
No, for
real. Like, getting to be like one of the few bands that got to go back out on tour during this time was a huge blessing.
Absolutely. Yeah. One that isn't normally, I think, would be easy to be taken for granted, but it's really not. After taking all that time off and seeing how other bands kind of just broke up or weren't able to make it happen, or like life changed and people reprioritized, being able to go back out now is pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, and people like wanting to come see you.
Yeah.
And you're like, shows are selling out.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh shit. Like,
exactly.
This is so, because this was only like our second ever headlining tour.
No shit.
Yeah. Okay. We've been, I mean, like, we did like DIY shit for sure. Yeah, you know, no. But like, this was like the second official, like,
packaged, like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Cool.
And it went both better. The joke I made earlier before we started recording was, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, if anybody is listening, they've been following your guys' saga, which has been every band's nightmare for sure. Where are you guys standing with it? It's like, you know, first I have to say I'm very sorry, and I, you know, feel terrible that this happened to you guys, and can relate to it in a way of like, I can't imagine that happening. It's so fucking devastating to have all of your fucking shit stolen. And you're kind of just building back now.
Yeah. I really wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Yeah.
And
nobody?
Like, yeah. Yeah, maybe I should think like a little bit longer.
Sure.
Well, I used to have this terrible joke because one time, this one band, I won't say who they are, but they severely went over their time slot in a music festival.
Worst faux pas. At a festival even. That's
at a
so
music
bad.
Festival. I can excuse a little show over the whatever.
Yeah.
But this was like 4 a.m. at Primavera. I'll give that much detail. I'll give that much detail that they went like 20 minutes over. 20 minutes. Maybe it was 10 and it felt like 20, but it was like beyond. And it was for this like fucking like self jacking off single note, like literally like a one note, like bam, bam. And I hated it. A few years later, I see that band got all their stuff stolen.
Damn.
And my first thought was, that's what you get for going over your festival time. A horrible thought to have. A horrible thought to have.
It's, yeah.
And I now feel so ashamed of that.
Yeah.
But
well, yeah, I mean, as a festival, they didn't just fuck over, you know, the band playing after them. They potentially fucked over.
Yeah, the whole fucking thing.
Dozens of bands. Hundreds
of
people
actually
working.
It was the last. It was like 4 in the morning. We were like the end one.
When you said Primavera, that's the Spanish festival, right?
Yeah. That's the Spanish festival. So it was like 4 in the morning at Primavera, but there's still like thousands of people out.
Yeah, it's one of the largest festivals in the world.
It's the coolest festival I've ever been lucky to play.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so we got all of our stuff stolen. To my knowledge, I don't think we ever went over our set time at a festival. So some things you have no...
So, yeah, some things you don't have control over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks. And I don't have any... I can't even say like, oh, glad it worked out for you guys, because it didn't.
Because it didn't. It's still being worked out. It's still a nightmare. And that's what I didn't expect. I didn't expect how emotionally I was going to feel about it.
Sure.
And then two, I didn't think that it would be like an up and down. Like some days I'm fine and some days I'm like very sad and angry.
God damn it.
And I would say all of MP is like that.
Yeah.
A crisis really shows who people really are. And I have to say we are a very like strong and resilient group of people.
Hell yeah. I mean, at least you could take that from it for sure.
And it all, I mean, like people were as kind as could possibly be for a nightmare thing happening. Like I saw the GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. It was like wild that people would care that much about us losing our instruments, you know?
Totally. That's like definitely a silver lining, you know, to use that expression. The only similar thing that happened to us, we got robbed one time. We got robbed a million times, but all of our shit was never taken, but all of our personal stuff got robbed in England. Ooh. One time. And we did the same thing. We set up, I don't know if GoFundMe was around at that point. It was like
Kickstarter.
Yeah, I think we just put out like a PayPal address or something.
Oh, okay.
But it was, you know, we were crying looking at the names on it because it was like, oh, this person whom we haven't spoken with in 7 years or however long our band had been around at that time donated to us and was like still cared and stuff. And just to see the complete outpouring was really, you know, really helpful at that time.
Yeah. I finally kind of like went through the list a little bit. I mean, it was like 1,000 people. So I was like,
damn.
Oh, fuck.
That's amazing.
In like less than 12 hours.
Wow.
We went to go see Halloween Kills. And when we came out, we had like went over our goal. So now it's like we have to start. I have finally accepted that probably our stuff is not coming back soon.
Yeah.
So it is, we have to buy new things. So I've been like slowly, like I've been going to Russo's Music a lot.
Yeah.
And like going for, I mean, it's like, I'm buying like boring shit too. I'm like getting a pedal board.
Just like, I need zip ties.
And a voodoo power supply.
And a patch cable.
And a patch cable. Yeah. And a tuner.
Oh, God. Man, so, well, because there was a big saga of somebody that went to go see Halloween Kills. And I'm never going to see the movie, I don't think. But how was that, at least?
It was fun. Nice. Bear was laughing a lot.
Yeah.
We really kept each other's spirits high during that time. We like very like...
Which, like, as you said, is a big testament to who you guys are as friends and as a band. Like, you know, some people would just...
We communally grieved. Like, we like cried together, but also at different times. We went manic, I think, because this was also the last week of being on the road for 7 weeks.
Jesus Christ. We've never done a 7-week tour. That's so
We long. Were away for 7 weeks, but it was like 6 weeks of shows. Okay. So we had like 8 days off in LA.
Oh, okay. No shit.
In like the very middle of the tour, which was kind of nice. I think I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That having that rest.
Totally.
Still
not home, but you're like.
Yeah, you're still not home. You're still traveling.
Yeah. To shift it a bit, I remember you showing us when we did that European tour together. Do you have a bunch of random AI generated bootleg merch?
Wait,
is it those websites that you were showing us?
Oh, like- yeah. I haven't checked in on that in a while.
Damn. What if it exploded?
So
what was the deal with it? What was it?
It was those like, like Bubble Red or Bubble Rocket or Rubble Red Bubble? Bubble? Red Bubble.
Red Bubble. Yeah, yeah.
Red Bubble.
I remember you showing me too. I don't know what it is, but.
I think it's just like some website where you can make anything. Like even if you don't have like.
Just put art on
the
anything.
Copyright to yeah. it. But you can also sell it. Yeah. So someone was selling like shower curtains and like bath rugs and bed sheets and like pillowcases and koozies of like our artwork and designs and photos of us.
The photos part, that makes it take a little bit of a turn, a little personalized.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even like for you don't fuck with our artists either, you know?
Oh,
like,
of course.
You know,
yeah.
We got that from them and now you're just.
Yeah, totally. Now you're selling a shower curtain.
Yeah. With a original Dan Hughes shit on it. You're going to have to pay up for that.
Did you guys order any?
No, and I really regret that.
Damn. I bet it's still there.
Because we wanted to. That was like Kayleen's great idea, was that we would like order a bunch of it and we would do like one of those unboxing vids.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Back that.
But it very shortly after that tour, everything stopped.
Ah, damn. That was our last tour. I remember specifically when it was in Liverpool on Valentine's Day. I'd read a. Post by this like economics blog called Epsilon Theory.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, here, this is why coronavirus is going to be a really big deal. And up to that point, we had seen like German press, UK press, US press. Everybody was like, had different takes on it. For us, it was a hilarious joke at the time. And then I read that article and I remember texting everybody and being like, actually, I think this, they were using an analogy of the US and Viet Cong murder rates during the Vietnam War, what? And how the U.S. Media had changed and inflated them or deflated them and was showing exactly what the Chinese government at the time was doing. So I was like, this is interesting. And I kept reading it and I was like, oh, man, this is really interesting. It was like early on when that doctor had posted like a selfie of himself in the bed. He had like a, you know, a ventilator mask on.
Oh, yeah.
Like iconic picture. And I remember texting everybody and being like, guys, I think this is going to be a big deal. And then we were just like, okay, what are we going to get for dinner now? And I was like, you know, kind of over that.
And it was a big deal.
And it was a big deal.
Yeah, because like we started a tour right after that one, after we got home like 10, no, like 7 days later.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so being in Europe, starting to read about that, and then getting home, flying to LA, and on that coast then being like, people being like, oh, what's going on with this virus? And then we made it like 2 weeks into that tour.
And it was before. Like, okay, we're all going to go home as fast as we can.
As fast as we can.
Yeah. That was a fucking weird one. But fuck that. Hopefully it's going to be, I'm going to knock on wood. Hopefully it's ending.
In that same mode now.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Fuck this.
Do what I got to do. Fuck that. I don't want to like
do what I got to do. I'll be safe.
Yeah.
I will make the sacrifices for touring.
Oh, fuck yeah, for sure. Actually, I wanted to ask you about that as well. It's like, I don't think people realize, it's kind of...
Touring is different now.
It's different now, and no one's in charge as well.
Mm.
So we're trying to figure out, you know, you're trying to figure out what to do and how to do it. And
you're in charge.
Yeah, you're in charge. Exactly. You're in charge, so you have to, like, you know, whatever you decide goes. Certain venues have their own policies, and certain states and cities have their own policies, yeah. But when it comes to, like... being responsible, there's no guidebook released by the CDC for touring. There's no OSHA. Well, there is an OSHA, but they don't really touch live music. But so you kind of
CDC's DIY ambassador.
Yeah, exactly.
I know we're not DIY anymore, but it's funnier when you say like
some kid shows up.
I mean, but that's like
septum piercing from CDC.
I'm like, I can't imagine. DIY touring must be even harder now.
Yeah. That or they just slam really. I can imagine what we would have done when we were DIY touring, and it would probably either be kind of, you know, wing it or try the best that we can with the resources that we have, or just go full bore the other direction and be like, well, I guess we're out here.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. Everybody's vaccinated, right? Like, what are you going to do? Check everybody's phone at Titan House?
Yeah, exactly. There's no, like, green room at the house show.
No, exactly.
You know, like, you're able to... That's, like, the biggest change is, like, you're a lot more isolated from your audience and other people.
Totally.
There's not... Even, like when we were talking about, like, seeing friends for the first time in a long time, like...
Yeah.
That was still... Depending on... That last week, after we got our stuff stolen, I will admit, we got fucked up.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
We were like, we went out like to a bar.
Nice.
That like last week and just got absolutely shit faced.
Yeah, how would you not? That's going and playing a show in front of hundreds of people.
I never have drank before shows, like ever. I'm like one of those people.
No shit.
I do not drink before shows. That last week, I think every show I played, I was a little drunk.
Damn, how was it?
I mean, people seem to still be having a good time. They're still crying and stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
it kind of actually made it like a little bit fun.
Yeah.
And loose. And because also at that point we were borrowing everything from like Angel Dust.
Oh, of course. That's all like...
So even like when I like looked down, I was like, I kind of need to like be drunk to
get past the inhibition of this is not mine. This is not what I practiced. This is a whole new thing.
Exactly. This is a whole new thing.
Totally. I feel like drinking before playing can be playing with fire a little bit. Sometimes it's really nice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not. But if you're, you know, sometimes a festival or something that's like real short, you're like, yeah, okay, it's cool. But there's been definitely times where all four of us have at separate times drank too much before playing. One time I thanked a band that wasn't playing a show. That wasn't playing the show. That was one. That one sticks out for me. But I wanted to ask a question about your guy's name, which I'm sure that you are so excited to hear, or that you haven't heard 5,000 times.
I'm so surprised that you're going to ask me about the name.
Well, I figured I'd toss it up. I heard that Alexa, the AI used by Amazon,
AI.
If you said, hey, Alexa, play Mannequin Pussy, that it doesn't work.
It just got fixed.
Wow, okay.
Or well, I say fixed, but it just got uncensored.
Yeah.
So now if you ask Alexa to play Mannequin Pussy, she says, playing songs by Mannequin Pussy.
Nice.
And for a long time, she started just bleeping us out. Or she wouldn't even play us. Like, you'd ask her to play us, and then it would just, like, shut down.
It just couldn't handle the command.
Wait, I kind of want to... wonder if it's... My phone is closed. I kind of want to read a text I got from my mom. Because my mom is... My mom. She really thinks we should change the name at this point. And so shout out to Japanese Breakfast, who got nominated for 2 Grammys.
Incredible.
So exciting. I was joking with a friend where I'm like, I feel like it's happening to me because I'm like so proud. Like feeling of like, yes, I always believed in you. My mom sent me a text that said, so excited for Japanese Breakfast, best new artist nom. 3 exclamation points. There's no woman in best rock category. You know you could grab both categories if you change the band's name. What are you waiting for? 3 question marks. And then she followed it up with, in the music industry, sex sells, but pussy won't even be given a chance. Too much censorship.
Damn.
And she was the one who discovered that the Alexa was...
That's incredible.
Yeah.
She's saying the most mom text ever, which is like nudge you in a direction that she wants you to go in, but then followed it up with like something so true and like virtuous.
I know. She's a smart woman.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, like, I'm worried that she's right. Sex sells, but pussy will never sell.
No.
Pussy doesn't.
Yeah. I definitely didn't want to like, talk too much about the name in that kind of context, but that's perfect.
Yeah.
I guess there is a bunch of bands that have ended up having to change their name, not necessarily for censorship reasons. And this one's such a loaded censorship too.
Yeah.
It's like, can't think of like a cock euphemism that wouldn't be able to be used.
Yeah. That's
maybe if you had prick in your name, but even then.
I kind of use like SNL a little bit as my like barometer as to like what can be said.
Okay.
And I have noticed like they've said dick. And I swear someone said pussy on one of the last episodes and it was not beeped out.
Well, it's interesting that you're saying this too now because I didn't even really think about how you can't say pussy on like TV.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, okay.
But I'm pretty sure they did. And I
they, I feel like they used it in the like you're a pussy way.
Okay, not the
which
like,
you think
cat euphemism.
Exactly, yeah. Which would be a little bit more censored.
Yeah, totally.
But
it's like pejorative.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, like we've been a band for 10 years, and I definitely thought that by now, this wouldn't be an issue at all.
Sure.
But actually, I think it's gotten worse.
Damn, really? Because I was thinking that maybe it would be, you know, the music industry is so, what's the word to use here? Not segmented, but like siloed in a certain sense. You know, because you guys don't necessarily need commercial radio play.
No.
You know, there's...
The world's changed like that. Yeah,
the world's changed. So I wonder if it could exist. Things that would normally be censored, if they could exist in those kind of... They're not even silos. It's just like another area. But you're thinking, you're saying it's worse now.
Kind of. I mean, like the AI thing was definitely like a, oh shit, this is a completely new challenge.
Yeah.
To people even being able to play our music. Because at first it was like, if you asked her to play it, she would just shut off.
Wow.
Which is a little dramatic, I think.
Damn.
But now, you know, apparently that's fixed. And like I had, you know, I had to have like Epitaph, like reach out to Amazon.
Oh man, I wish I could hear that phone call.
I was like really I was like pissed about it.
Yeah, I mean, as you should be.
Yeah,
it's kind of on so many levels. Not only is it your thing, but it's also like, what, you can't say pussy to Amazon? You could say fuck to Amazon, you know, like why not?
Yeah,
or any other like well, most other euphemisms that we, or epithets that we have, that would not, that that is either of those things.
I just don't see what the big deal is. I really don't.
No, definitely not. Are you, what, are you gonna protect the children? Like, that's like the only like moral thing that you could maybe pose. But so I had to ask. It always, it kind of reminds me of the story of we played Reading and Leeds, and we played on a Friday and a Sunday, and on the Saturday we flew to Finland to play a festival out in the middle of nowhere.
Wow,
where
that's
everyone was playing neon strings. You ever see like?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
First time I ever saw
that. Always wondered who would buy those.
Finnish people. Finnish metalheads. But we were bundled with, basically, our like logistics were bundled with Fucked Up, the Canadian band. And they got to the border guard. And when they walked up, and they're like, what is the name of your band? And he was like, Fucked Up. And they're like, what's the name of your band? And he's like, Fucked Up. And then the border guard just like smirked and laughed. And I was wondering if that happens to you guys often, like Canada and shit like that.
Actually, I would say border guards love us.
Yeah. Makes sense. It's like different than, you know, yeah, what else is going on.
What, one time we went into Canada and we were actually, I think this was the tour that was the first tour that Bear did with us. We went to Canada and played with Colleen Green, a good friend of mine who actually played my kitchen back in the Boulder days.
No shit.
Yeah.
Very cool.
She was the first person I played music with, because shortly after she played my kitchen, she hit me up and was like, yo, I'm pretty sure you're musical, like I need someone to play bass on this tour I have coming up. And I was like, not one to look a gift horse in the mouth or whatever. Yeah, that, yeah, expression is. And I when she asked like if I was musical, I was like, yeah, I play bass.
Yeah.
Never played before. I was like, I feel like 2 months is probably enough time to figure it out.
Yeah, did you pull it off?
I did. Yeah,
yeah, hell yeah.
And she asked me to go on another tour with her, and then I started Mannequin Pussy, and I was like, oh, like I could do this.
Yeah.
But anyway, Canada. We go to play with Colleen Green, and I think we enter the country first, and then later, someone who was from the U.S. but came to the show, I forget where we were, Montreal or Toronto, probably one of those.
Someone from Buffalo or some shit.
Yeah, exactly. Someone from like Buffalo was like, oh, like when I came to the show, they asked me like what I was doing here, and I was like, I didn't want to say like your name, and I said, oh, I'm going to see Colleen Green. And the border guard was like, oh, yeah, she's playing with Mannequin Pussy tonight.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love that.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I always feel, I don't know how it is for you guys, but I always feel like border guards, it all is about which one you get and what, like, kind of day they're having.
Oh, we've gotten fucked, like, every time we get searched.
Yeah.
But I think they like us.
Yeah. Maybe they, like, keep it in their extra. Like,
This
would be fun. So you guys got some cool shit coming up. The Franklin Music Hall show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I keep forgetting about that show.
Right. Looks sick.
I'm going to go on record to say I did not want to play that show. And the reason I didn't want to play that show.
I wonder who talked you into it.
You know exactly who talked me into it. Because I didn't want to deal with like having to get gear again.
Oh, shit.
I've just been like, I was like, if we play a show, that means that I have to like cross this emotional hurdle and face this
totally
thing.
Because it can't just like roll on a, I mean, what are you going to do? Spend a quarter of the amount of money renting shit that you would.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn, I didn't even think about that. That sucks.
So that was the only reason, which is, you know, like I should get over it. And like, so I am excited about that.
Nice.
Oh yeah. Is this going to be out before that happens?
Yeah, it's out. Oops, just threw my pen. It is. Yeah, I don't know if the tickets are on sale, but it's announced.
Yeah. Right. No, I meant like, is this podcast going to be out before
it
happens?
Oh, yeah. I put it out when, like, today. In oh, like an hour.
No shit. Yeah, oh, yeah. My God. Easy turnaround.
Yeah, totally. Take a cue from like all the rappers and stuff that just like do something and then immediately put it out.
Yeah. It's a good mindset to get in. Yeah. We have the New Year's Eve show, which I actually am pretty excited about now. Like, I haven't played a New Year's show in a long time. I haven't had a big New Year's party in a long time.
Yeah.
Two?
At least 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. At least 2 years. So it's kind of, you know.
Yeah. It's my favorite.
Get dressed up.
I'd say it's like my second favorite holiday or my favorite holiday. It's
get so dressed fun. Up. Get a little fucked up.
Yeah, you get dressed up, get fucked up. And it, all the while, you're driven by the idea that you're about to change for the better. You're like, oh, I have
to. You know what? I honestly haven't even thought about that. That part yet where I forgot about the hobbies part. I'm like, I'm going to get fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have a good time. Nikki said he's getting a. Maybe I shouldn't even say this. It's so ridiculous. But he said he's going to get a limo to take us from like Franklin Music Hall to Ortleaves.
Oh, I'm shit out of that. That's so good.
We're doing like the after party.
Oh, nice.
And I just like, awesome. I've just like laughed so hard thinking about the image of like a limo going from Franklin Music Hall to Ortleaves, which is like maybe 3 minutes away from each other.
You're going to have to get him to drive around a little bit. Just yeah. Up and down Frankfurt.
Take it, yeah, I was going to say take it up and down like Spring Garden a few times.
Yeah. So besides ripping the Band-Aid off with the equipment and doing the Electric Factory show, what are you guys excited about coming up for the next year?
Next year's already so busy.
Right.
And like we're really trying to write a new record and we definitely have some shows.
Yeah.
So we're doing, I'm going to St. Louis for a few days in January to try to write with some other musicians for like a few days.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I haven't tried to do that. Maybe ever.
Yeah.
And then
that's kind of scary, like the idea. It seems like such a thing that, you know, you're really good at writing music, it's what you want to do, but there's such a vulnerability there.
Like, oh yeah, writing with other people that you're
not used to seeing, like
people that you've never written with.
Oh my God,
you just kind of hope you can all like get your bodies into one place and write a song in 3 days.
Yeah, totally.
I'm into that experiment though. I think like what we were talking about was just quickly focusing on something and like letting it be. That's kind of how like the EP was that we put out this year. It was like quickly write songs. Don't think about it too much.
Trust what you're doing.
Get out of there.
It's my favorite part. As much as I love writing music and I love recording and playing in a band, my favorite thing is like the last day in the studio. Or yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
My favorite part of recording is when the album is finished.
Yeah, exactly. Someone else is gonna mix it. If they're gonna do it and then send it to me, and I'm gonna be even more stoked, most likely. Yeah, I like the getting out part. That's great.
So I'm doing that, and then weekend of January 15th, my friend CJ Harvey, who's been on a few tours with us, she's also a photographer, so she's having a gallery showing down there.
Oh, very cool.
A photography, and she asked me to come down and like DJ it. So I was like, all right, cool.
That's awesome.
That fucking sounds fun.
Hell yeah.
And then end of January, we have two flyout shows in LA. So MP's going out to LA for like a little over a week and going to try to write when we're out there.
Nice.
And then we have a 2-week tour in February. Have off in March. A couple festivals. April, May.
Yeah.
Europe, June, July. And then it's like already July. And I'm like, wow. Oh, shit.
There's like a something that's kind of bum to have your life planned out like that. But at the same time, it's fucking awesome to be like, have all these things to know that it's structured. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
Like us too. We have planned out through basically the end of next year. And it's like,
yeah.
Hell yeah, I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, this is the thing that like we weren't able to do for almost for 18 months.
Yeah.
That's work.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
So I know that, you know, Epitaph would love for us to not tour and just work on a record, but yeah, we were not able to do it for 18 months.
Doesn't work that way anymore.
So,
we
yeah.
have to go on tour so you can pay.
You kind of have to pay your bills, so.
Yeah, exactly. You know more than anybody.
Go on tour now.
Oh, yeah. But thank you so very much for coming on. I really appreciate it, and I can't wait to hear what you and the rest of Mannequin Pussy comes up with next.
Cool. Thanks so much.
Nice. All right, thank you so much for joining us today. Intro song is Not the Only One by The Chisel. Outro song you're hearing right now is by Pat Breyer of Queen Jesus. All right, we'll see you again next time. Bye.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.